The question is that scientists, they conceive the universe as very long in terms of light years, whereas from the Bhagavatam we know that the universe is finite, and then each of the universe itself is covered by various layers which are all of increasing thickness. So where does science conception of the universe go wrong? Actually, the Bhagavatams and science conceptions, they operate from two different ways of looking at the world. And these two different paradigms were there even within the Indian tradition, Vedic tradition. That means that when you talk about cosmology, there's the Puranic cosmology or the Bhagavatam cosmology, and there is a whole another system of cosmology which is called as Jyotishya cosmology. The Jyotishya Shastras, Bhakti Sanatana Thakur was very learned in one of the Jyotishya Shastras, that was Surya Siddhanta. He wrote a commentary on that. Now, if we look at the Bhagavatam's cosmology and we look at the Jyotishya cosmology, then there is a huge amount of difference between them. And many of the eminent mathematicians in India, like Aryabhatta, Bhaskaracharya, Madhvacharya, not the Madhvacharya, Vaishnavacharya, Madhvacharya was a famous mathematician also. Now, they have all expressed bewilderment in understanding the Bhagavatam's cosmology. And further, if we see, in India, there is a well-developed astrological tradition where astrology is to a large extent connected with astronomy. We need to know the movements of the celestial positions and movements of the celestial bodies for the sake of calculating auspicious and inauspicious times. Now, all these astrological calculations use the Jyotishya cosmology. None of them use the Bhagavatam's cosmology. In fact, if we take the Bhagavatam's cosmology, then we can't even, at least with what information that is given, we can't even from our perception explain satisfactorily how the alteration of days and nights occurs. The sun is going around in the Bhagavatam's cosmology. So the point which I'm making over here is that these two different ways of looking at the cosmology, now it's not only science versus Bhagavatam. Rather, within the tradition that is accepted by our acharyas, there is the Bhagavatam's cosmology and then there is the Jyotishya cosmology. Even for example, so Jiva Goswami in Gopal Champu and Sanatan Goswami in Brihad Vaishnava Toshini, which is the 10th canto commentary, they talk elaborately about the time of the birth of Krishna. And that time they talk about the constellations and the calculations which they do. And again for this, they don't use the Bhagavatam cosmology at all. They use the Jyotishya cosmology. So, for all practical, operational purposes, even within religious contexts, the cosmology that was used was the Jyotishya cosmology. So, the Bhagavatam cosmology has never been used to practically calculate anything, nor has it been used, even none of our Vaishnava Acharyas, because now there are, as I said, there are glaring contradictions within the Bhagavatam's cosmology and the Jyotishya cosmology. And none of our acharyas use the Bhagavatam's cosmology to try to prove that the Jyotishya cosmology is false. So, rather than seeing that as contradictory, the understanding was that they are different scales of perception. In one of the Puranas, I forget which, it is mentioned that Maitreya Rishi, once he entered into a strand, because he was meditating on the Puranic cosmology, and he just couldn't make sense of it. And at that time, he just couldn't make sense of it. He entered into a trance, and then it was like he suddenly felt himself being lifted up, and he was taken to a heavenly perspective. And when he fell from that heavenly perspective, then he was able to make sense. Okay, this is the Beru Parvat, this is like this, this is like this. And then he was able to make some sense of it. So, the Bhagavatam, when it describes cosmology, it is not from the human perspective. It is from a celestial or a divine perspective. And from the human perspective, our acharyas certainly accepted the Bhagavatam's cosmology, but they did not use it to challenge the cosmology that was used for operational purposes. That was based on Jyotish Shastras. And Jyotish Shastras' cosmology, it also gives us, like modern science, it has a model for explaining cosmos within us, to us. Now that model, for us as common people, how do we know that model is true? Ultimately, within science itself, there's a big debate. Whether does science offer us an understanding of reality, or does science offer us a model of reality? That means we have some representation of reality which science is offering us. Or is science telling us reality as it is? So when Newtonian classical physics was ruling towards the end of the 19th century, early part of the 20th century, physicists did think that this is how nature is. Nature is made of atoms, and atoms are moving around. But then at the start of the 21st century, at the start of the 20th century, there were two big explosions in science. One was quantum physics and the other was relativity. And classical physics practically lay in ruins. At least classical physics claims of explaining all of nature, that lay in ruins. So now most scientists use what they call as the functional view of science. There is a functional view of science and an ontological view of science. Functional means this is the model that works, use it. Ontological means this is the nature of reality. Now relativity and quantum physics, they are violently contradictory. Relativity says that there are particles existing. Quantum physics says there are no particles, only waves existing. And nobody knows how to reconcile it. So what do scientists do? Whichever model works, they use it. So the point which I am making is that science offers us a particular model of reality. And that model does work in its own way. Now Prabhupada did say that particular quote, he said that whatever scientists say, we oppose. But then Prabhupada also used the products of science. Now, he used planes, he used microphone, he used dictaphone. So, and they worked. So, there is another famous conversation of Srila Prabhupada, or it's not so famous, where Prabhupada says that the devotees are talking, and Prabhupada says, we are not against the scientist's spirit of wanting to know. We are against their claim that there is no God. That means, now if you look at Prabhupada is making a very profound point over here. Now, so what has happened in the history of science is a gradual overconfidence in human ability. Gradual overconfidence in human ability. Originally, when Newton or Copernicus, when they studied the cosmos, they wanted to understand how God is running the cosmos. So the planets are moving by the law of gravity, but the law of gravity comes from God. The law of gravity is maintained by God. So they had a very theistic conception of the universe even when they had some laws talked about. But as subsequently scientists came forward, science seems to get more and more control over nature. They felt that there is no need for God. So theism holds that God is the creator and God is the controller. Atheism holds that God is neither the creator nor the controller. God just doesn't exist. In between, from the time of Newton, who was a pioneering scientist and who was a believer, to today's mainstream scientists, most of them are agnostics, if not atheists. Most scientists are not atheists, but they are at least operationally agnostics. So what happened in between was, there, from theism to atheism, in between came the worldview of deism. Deism is, God is the creator, but not the controller. God created the world, but now, afterward, the world runs according to laws. Like a clock. A clock is made by a designer. But the designer has no control over the clock. It's set according to mechanism and it's working. So that became the conception of God also. So yes, God is the creator, but he's not in control now. So therefore, we have to understand the mechanism and we have to control the mechanism. So that's how science started overreaching. So yes, there are mechanisms according to which the world works. That's fine enough. But to think that we can become the supreme controllers using scientific knowledge, that is where science blundered. So why I am giving this background is, if you look at Prabhupada's critique, sometimes some sound bites from Prabhupada's statements are highlighted disproportionately. And then, you know, what Prabhupada said might not be accurately represented. So my point is that Prabhupada also used science. And he wanted science to be used for building temples, for printing his books. So we can't say that Prabhupada was entirely against science. Because Prabhupada used and also recommended, he mentioned a philosophical principle that Yukta Vairagya means whatever can be used in service of Krishna, we will use it. So Prabhupada's opposition primarily was to the atheism that is promoted in the name of science. And with respect to cosmology, the Bhagavatam offers a particular cosmology, but that cosmology is not from the human perspective. And to use that cosmology to try to challenge or even to bring that into even a dialogue with modern cosmology, it's just two different models. They cannot be brought, they cannot be even brought into dialogue, what to speak of confrontation. Because they're just two different ways of looking at reality. So just like, you know, in my earlier classes, I gave the example of how Ayurveda and allopathy, they're two different modes of medicine, and Ayurveda has a concept of heat in the body. And this is the cause if the heat increases. Now, allopathy doesn't have that concept of heat. But so both of them work in their own way. Both of them have their utility. And different people at different times may use different modes of medicine. So like that, the Bhagavatam's cosmology, if you look at it at the start, at the end, no, it starts with the 15th chapter and it ends with the 25th chapter. So at one time for about a couple of years, I was also part of the planetarium team. And we did a lot of study at that time. And if you see in those 10 chapters, there are not more than a few hundred verses about cosmology. And even within those verses, there is not much cosmological description. There is more of theological description. This is the Jambudvipa is there, and on this planet, the people are worshipping this manifestation of Hari. And these are the prayers thereof. And if you look at the start and at the end, the primary description over there is of, by meditating on this, one can turn one's mind towards Hari. The focus of that is to fix the mind on Krishna. Now, with the description that is given in the Bhagavatam, now, what to speak of challenging modern scientific cosmology, we can't even conceive the Bhagavatam's cosmos. And it's not we. The Bhagavatam itself says that even Brahmaji cannot conceive it. So even if we had Brahmaji in our planetarium team, still we would be in trouble. So now, trying to construct a planetarium or construct a model of the cosmos using the Bhagavatam's description of cosmology is like some historian 500 years later, suppose assume, you know, all the history, all the geography books of the world have been destroyed. And the only book that a person has is Prabhupada Lilamrut. And based on Prabhupada Lilamrut, suppose that historian wants to construct a map of America. Yes, Prabhupada went eastwards, Prabhupada went northwards, Prabhupada went southwards, that all that will be there. But Lilamrut is not a geography book. It will be next to impossible to try to construct a map of America using Lilamrut. Similarly, you know, to try to construct a planetarium's model, a coherent model, which will be intelligible. Prabhupada wanted four things. You know, we should be able to explain the alteration of day and night. We should be able to explain the phases of the moon. We should be able to explain the alteration of seasons. And we should be able to explain the eclipses. With the description that we have in the Bhagavatam, none of these are explainable. And that's why Prabhupada said, you go and find some expert. And with the help of that expert, some traditional scholar, maybe in Vishri Sampradaya, Madhva Sampradaya, try to find some scholar and try to understand it. Now, till now, nobody has found a scholar like that. So now some model is being constructed, but a lot of things from other books are being imported to try to understand. And those other books have many other conceptions, how much they are accurate with, how much they actually gel with what is there in the Bhagavatam, that is a matter of debate. So, the Bhagavatam's vision of the planetarium or Bhagavatam's vision of cosmology is primarily to help us turn our mind towards God. Even within the Vedic tradition, it was never used for operational purposes, for astrological or astronomical calculations. So we live today in a world where even now there are traditional astrologers who use Jyotisha cosmology for understanding and operating the for understanding the cosmos and doing astrological calculations. So that is a model which works, and science offers another model of reality, which also works in its own way. So rather than seeing that these two are, there are definitely many features of science model of reality which are wrong. Definitely. But there are also features of it which work. And that's how we are able to use technology. That's how the world is using so much technology. So to try to sort of envision an inherent and irreconcilable conflict between Bhagavatam and science, I think that is an oversimplification. They both are very complex. They both have their purposes. And certainly there will be some areas of conflict. But whether everything is inherently in conflict, because as I said, the Bhagavatam is not meant to give us an empirical description of the cosmos as we can perceive it. And lastly, with respect to light years, the Bhagavatam's description of space, now whether that is to be, that is the same, or rather Bhagavatam's description of distances, whether that is exactly the same as we understand distance, now that is itself a whole subject of discussion. Because at various levels, when the Bhagavatam talks about yojana, the Bhagavatam uses the word yojana, but within the Indian tradition itself, the word yojan has talks about different distances. And further, when the Bhagavatam, when we generally consider the heaven to be up, when we talk about heaven as up, the Bhagavatam also has the conception the earth is a sphere. If the earth is a sphere, then where is up? You know, in Australia, one side is up. In Europe, another side is up. In India, one side is up. America, another side is up. So, Sadaput Prabhu in his Vedic cosmography, his book, he talks about how the Bhagavatam's cosmology has a vertical dimension, which has a karmic aspect to it. That means, you know, when Bhagavatam says you go up to the heavens and heaven is up, that is not just simply geographically or geometrically up. There is a karmic up to it. And within that karmic up also, there are some dimensions of distances given. Now, how those dimensions of distances correlate with the conception of distance that is there within modern science? It's very doubtful whether there's a simplistic correlation between the two. Because the Bhagavatam is talking about much subtler concepts. That basically the two are different models of working, of looking at the cosmos. And yes, scientists go wrong because they start with the presumption that there's no God. And even when the evidence points towards God, they reject that evidence. Mm-hmm. That is definitely wrong. But beyond that, in the operational sense, when as devotees, we can actually see the hand of God even within the knowledge that science is revealing. That means when we see that, I'll conclude with this point. This answer is becoming a little technical. But as devotees, if you look at the Bhagavatam, now if you see Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sa Characharam Hetu Nanena Kauntya Jagat Viparivartate. There's a sequence which is often lost in this verse. Krishna is saying, material nature works under my supervision. Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti. This is one part of the verse. But the other part of the verse is, Hetu Nanena Kauntya Jagat Viparivartate. Under its law, all the changes happen. Or under its supervision, under its cause and effect. So, we have Isha Upanishad saying, Om Purnamada Purnamidam. That the Lord is complete and the earth is also complete. And whatever emanates from Him is complete. So, even the universe is complete in itself. That means the universe is a complete system. And complete system means there are mechanisms by which it will function. So, science, when it shows us some mechanisms, it's not necessarily contradicted to what Shastra tells us. Just that science doesn't inquire far enough to go to the cause of those mechanisms. It's assumed the mechanisms are there. Shastra takes us beyond the mechanisms to their cause. So it's not that scripture is an explanatory alternative to science. Scripture, or rather God, when scripture talks about God, God is not an explanatory alternative to science. God is the explanatory foundation for science. When I say God is not an explanatory alternative for science, that doesn't mean that because science can't explain it, so therefore we need God to explain it. It's not that there's a competition between God and science. Science's capacity to explain comes from God. God is the explanatory foundation for science. So the systems that are there in nature, the mechanisms that are there in nature, which science uncovers, they do work. And their workability is what makes technology happen. But that is not all that is there to nature. So when we position scripture as a competitor of science, so we devalue scripture. We devalue scripture because scripture is concerned with far more lofty purposes than trying to give us the mechanisms of certain of how things work in this world. Scripture's consistent teaching is that material world is temporary and we need to go beyond the material world. So scripture may give us some material knowledge also. Now, how that material knowledge is to be reconciled with the knowledge that we acquire from our sense perception, or which the knowledge which was used even in the tradition as the Jyotish Shastra, that is something which even the past acharyas were not able to conceive. So if we are not able to reconcile the Bhagavatam's cosmology with the currently prevailing body of knowledge, that is science, I don't think that's a very serious deficiency. So there is paravidya and there is aparavidya. The Bhagavatam's primary contribution is paravidya. And as far as aparavidya, paravidya is transcendental knowledge, aparavidya is material knowledge. Material knowledge, Prabhupada, for example, he talked about Ayurveda. He practiced Ayurveda. He used Ayurveda. But he was not a fanatic for that. No, he said, whatever works, use it. He sometimes used allopathy himself. Once in London, he did a surgeon. And for disciples, he told, whatever works, use it. So like that for us, no, if science offers some knowledge which we can use in Krishna's service, we will use it. But we won't let science determine our conception of the purpose of life. We won't let science become the judge for deciding whether God exists or not, soul exists or not, whether bhakti is for real or not. But science and scripture are offering us different models of reality that are not necessarily contradictory or even competition. They're just at different scales of reality. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki.